I can show you the world. Shining, shimmering, splendid.
Disney came out on top at the box office this Memorial Day weekend with its live-action remake of Aladdin that earned more than $230 million around the world. And although the movie is not a whole new world for viewers who remember the 1992 animated version, the film's casting does represent a new direction for the studio. While the original was headlined by white voice actors, the 2019 version mainly features actors of Middle Eastern and North African descent, of course alongside Will Smith, who's playing the genie. Here's Mina Massoud and Naomi Scott as Aladdin and Jasmine.
You should see these places. I mean, there's a whole world outside of books and maps. Do you want to?
How? Every door is guarded.
Who said anything about a door?
What are you doing?
Sometimes, princess, sometimes you just have to take a risk.
The film's initial success is a major win for Middle Eastern and North African representation on the screen, but the road to get here has been long and filled with stereotypes. Omar Mualim recently published a piece for The Ringer tracing the history of Middle Eastern and North African actors in Hollywood. Thanks for joining us, Omar.
Oh, hi, Tanzina. Thanks for having me here.
So back in the 90s, you saw the original Aladdin in theaters. What were your memories of the original, and how does this current version compare?
Yeah, they were pretty vivid. It's the first time that I remember my family going to see a movie together, and you know, it was kind of a big deal in our small little Canadian town to know that Disney made a movie about us. And we largely felt kind of proud to be seen, but there were these little things that we picked up on that were kind of unsettling, and you know, there was these very the exaggerated Arab features to the point of being grotesque on most of the characters except for Aladdin and Jasmine, and this conflation of South Asian and Middle Eastern culture. And then there was this opening song, this lyric in the opening song that says, you know, I come from a land of a faraway place where they cut off your ear if they don't like your face. And it's barbaric, but hey, it's home. And it was, you know, it's just kind of, it was an insulting thing. I had to have it kind of explained to me as a child, but it's something that stuck with me. And it stuck with a lot of people. There was a big backlash against Disney, and they did end up changing that lyric in the home video. And 27 years later, they were able at least to try to address some of the other cultural insensitivities.
Of course, we've heard that when Disney was casting the film, as we often hear when it comes to casting diverse films, there were reports that the studio was struggling to cast Aladdin and Jasmine. What did you make of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's no surprise when you're working within the Hollywood system and you automatically expect to have an A-list household name in a movie, then that kind of rules out just about every actor of color, at least every brown actor or Middle Eastern actor. So you know, it was no surprise that they were struggling with that. But I think a lot of people said, forget about it. Just do what's right. I mean, when they started to talk about how much of a struggle it was, I think a lot of people felt like they were just kind of leaking that information maybe to protect themselves from inevitably whitewashing the cast as they did with Prince of Persia. But to their credit, I think that they did a stellar job and the effort paid off.
You know, I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the bigger picture for actors and roles for Middle Eastern and North African actors in Hollywood. How have the sort of stereotypes evolved and or gotten better or worse generally?
Well, I mean, they've certainly gotten better, and I think they've gotten better really quickly, because for the first just about century of Hollywood, they were pretty negative. I mean, we can go back to the silent era, and you start to see these these tropes starting to take, starting to emerge then. These are the sort of lecherous sheiks and the harem maidens who are sirens or their, oppressed women. And this kind of just continues on until the 70s. Then we start to see the Muslim fundamentalist or Arab terrorist trope. And that kind of dominates stories about Middle Eastern, North African, and even South Asian stories for the next few decades. Only after 9/11 did we start to see a little bit more pushback, and it's largely coming from, you know, from the actors themselves, the audiences, and having more representation in the writers' rooms as well.
You also have a distant relative whose name is Frank Lactine, who was born in Lebanon and made his way to Hollywood. Tell us a little bit about him and the roles that he played.
Yeah, Frank was... I think it's safe to say the first Arab movie star. He was a silent era star. He was discovered accidentally in a crowd. He was he just had this extremely distinct face. The ways that people, the early Hollywood press, would describe it is kind of morbid. They would describe it as like cadaverous looking and wolfish and basilisk. And he had this ethnic ambiguity too. You couldn't really tell what he was. So he fulfilled early Hollywood's need for ethnic villains. And so over his early career, he played, you know, bad Arabs, but also, you know, bad Chinese and villainous Indians and villainous Pacific Islanders even. His star rose off of these very ugly tropes, and he was at one point one of the most in-demand actors of his time. He had an interesting relationship with his ancestry. I think I've collected all these personal records and then compared them to the persona he put forward in his clippings. And he simultaneously seemed to be very proud of his ancestry, but also very insecure about his roots as well.
We noticed that there is a certain stereotype that seems to emerge in the 1970s, which is the terrorist stereotype of the Middle Eastern actors. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Sure. You know, they started to emerge kind of a little bit early on after the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. But they started to grow after the OPEC crisis and then really take off after the 1979 Iran hostage crisis, to the point where they just kind of, you know, throwing in, sprinkling a little bit of a Muslim or Middle Eastern terrorist into your story just became a really lazy plot device. I didn't recall this or even notice this when I was a kid, but I recently went back to Back to the Future, the first one. And in the first few minutes, there's these enraged, fanatical Libyans who are trying to kill our heroes. And it's just a plot device so that they can go back to the past.
Omar Mualim is a writer and journalist, and his upcoming book is called Praying to the West. Thank you so much, Omar.
Thank you so much for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.